inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lee.
Drew Eldridge from Oklahoma City is joining us on the podcast today. Drew has a great story. He's not buying properties for cash flow today. He's buying properties and thinking of them as his retirement plan that are going to produce some cash when he decides he doesn't want to work anymore. He started off buying properties really conservatively, maybe buying a house a year to kind of prove to himself that this actually worked. And in the last year, he has totally been sold and has totally fallen in love with rental properties. And he has picked up 9 properties in the last 12 months. I think that's absolutely incredible. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds and we'll meet Drew.
Are you looking for a roadmap to financial freedom? If so, we have a solution for you. Narada Real Estate is offering a limited number of free strategy sessions to help you get out of the rat race. Learn how you can create wealth and build monthly passive income. To set up a time with one of our knowledgeable investment counselors, simply go to NaradaRealEstate.com. That's NaradaRealEstate.com.
Hey, Drew, welcome to the podcast. So what got you first interested in buying rental properties?
Well, thanks for having me on, Dan. I appreciate it. I was around 30. I had just finished medical school and then a residency in emergency medicine. And I'd gone from spending my 20s making no money, working all the time, to now I'm 30 with the prospect of actually starting to have a decent income. And I had no idea what to do with it. In medical school, they really don't teach us anything about business. And so as I started to do a little research, I looked up and said, well, what do all the wealthy people invest in? And it seemed like real estate was a commonality. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I just started looking. I started reading, went to the library, checked out every book I could, went to Barnes & Noble, found every book I could on real estate, and just started reading and then decided, maybe I need to look into buying some rentals. And that's how I got started.
And what I love about your story is that you didn't just jump into it and buy 100 properties your first day out. You kind of took it slow and kind of got comfortable with it before you started buying more properties. Was that calculated or did that just kind of happen that way?
Probably a little bit of both. Everything that I read said, if you do it right, real estate investing is truly a get rich slow prospect. And I was okay with that. My plan was that this wasn't going to be something that I was going to use for my day-to-day income. I know certainly a lot of your listeners maybe are looking to do that for the cash flow. And I think that's absolutely a possibility and a great way to do real estate. But for me, this was more of something, a long-term plan. And I was thinking about this almost as a retirement plan, truly, Dan. And so what I did is I just started, and I said, I want to do this right. And I know I'm going to make some mistakes because there's just no way around that. But I'm going to take some time, educate myself, look at getting one property and then learning from that one property and then moving forward. And truly what I was kind of interested in is I wanted to get one at some point, watch it for a while, look at the numbers, look at the kind of statistics. Obviously, I've got a bit of a, scientific kind of mind about approaching things and kind of wanted to be analytical and kind of go back and historically look and see what I'd done wrong. Mm-hmm. and how I learned from those mistakes and slowly amass a portfolio going from there.
I love that. So tell me about the first deal. How did you find that first property?
So probably like all your listeners, the first deal was horrible. I had no idea what I was doing. I was naive enough to think that kind of just learning from some books, I was going to have some idea of what I should do. We just kind of went and started looking on the MLS, approached a few realtors. And actually the first house, it was one that we just saw an open house. We were driving neighborhoods in an area where we had lived while I was a resident. Walked in, saw a house and truly bought it, pretty close to retail. It wasn't smart. It needed some work. And, we paid the price for it, but it was a great learning lesson.
And do you still have that property today?
I do.
And how has it worked out with your tenants and how has the property performed for you?
Historically it's actually done okay. It's obviously not as good a margins as a lot of my latter properties have, performed at, but it works and it's not something that I've wanted to ditch. And honestly, I kind of want to keep it. just as a reminder, because you'll stand. So I get into it and we buy this house and it needs some work. There's actually a hole in the floor and I'm thinking I'm going to put down some nice new wood floors, and I get in there. And the other thing too, I may mention, Dan, is that I decided from the beginning, I wanted to be an investor, not a landlord. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get a property manager from Property One, because I'd learned that out of a book. And I had grown up doing a lot of handyman type stuff. And I thought, I want to do some of this myself because I want to save money. Mm-hmm. So I get in there and I'm trying to do all these repairs. And during that time, I'm interviewing property managers. I find a lady that I connect with, and I'm thinking, this is the lady I'm going to use. She comes over and looks and goes, "What are you doing?" I go, "Hey, what are you talking about?" And she's like, "You're like redoing this house, like you're going to move into it." And here I am, I'm putting way too much money into this. I'm putting up crown molding and all kinds of other things. And she's like, "That's all well and good if you're wanting to flip this house. But if you're making this a rental, let's make it nice where you'll get good tenants, but you don't have to put everything in it." And so, that was an interesting learning experience. And kind of from there on, I learned to, I need to talk to more people and get their input rather than just kind of what I think I should be doing.
A lot of new investors make that same mistake. And, I think I thought that way too when I was first starting, that you think everyone is like you and they're going to like the things you like. But a lot of times tenants are really price sensitive. So if you can skip the crown molding and that allows you to lower the rent a little bit, a lot of times you're going to rent the place faster and the property is going to be more profitable.
No, yeah, 100%. And I agree with what you said. But, and I still want my properties to be nice because I want good people, because I think you take good care of your tenants and they'll take good care of you. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to, I wanted to be a place that I would be willing to live in whenever I was in, my 20s, or I was, kind of up and coming. And so I absolutely want to make it a safe place and a nice place. But you're right. It doesn't have to have glass chandeliers and everything, because there's just no way to make that feasible.
Right. So how long did you wait before you picked up your second property?
So after the first, it took probably, because I was doing the renovations in the beginning. And so I don't think we truly got that one rented out for probably about 4 or 5 months. And then thereafter, I kind of started looking, and I think we bought the second one. It probably would have been about a year after.
Okay.
So somewhere around 2007.
So you kind of went through the whole cycle, the whole lease cycle. You felt you kind of built some confidence up that this actually works, and your tenants, you maybe felt more comfortable. Is that what it was, that you felt more comfortable after a year?
That's exactly. Yeah. Man. It was basically, I just wanted to kind of a proof of concept to make sure that, someone actually is going to move in and start paying down my mortgage, because otherwise I didn't need another house that I was not living in and paying for.
How did that first property manager work out? Did you end up sticking with her? Is that the same manager that you use today?
I'm still with her. She manages almost all of my properties. And she would probably manage all of them. There's a couple that I've bought that have been interesting situations where, there's two that I've taken on in the last year that I've decided I'm going to self-manage at least for a little bit. And we can get into that at another point. But, and then also just for a comparison, I went with it's a nationwide company on two that I bought in the last year. And truly, it's just more to kind of A/B test things.
Yeah.
Going forward, I just wanted to make sure. And I've never done that, because she was so great. And, she even did things like, I would buy houses, and because she was just a single operation, she manages, I think, 150 to 200 doors between her and her partner. And, I would actually be able to walk in and say, "Hey, Linda, here's what I want done for this house. Here's my budget." And she would make it happen. She'd
That's
get the
awesome.
Bid. The contractors, and I truly didn't have to do anything. There's a little bit of a premium I'm paying for that, but for me it was worth it, because again, I was trying to be at that point an investor, not a landlord.
Right. And that's still the way that you run things today. You're not trying to get too hands-on with day-to-day management. You still see yourself as an investor?
That's correct. Yeah. I think for me, that's kind of the best thing going forward. I work days and nights, and it goes back and forth. We do 12-hour shifts in the emergency department. So I've already found on these that I thought that I was going to try to give myself a little learning experience this year and self-manage. you know, I'm not awake and the guy's calling me saying, hey, my dishwasher's not working and, you know, I'm asleep. And typically when I sleep, I put my phone in the other room and, you know, that just doesn't work well. Mm-hmm. The tenants want to get in touch with you. And so, you know, I can see going forward that at least for my situation, that's probably not the best.
Coming up on the Rental Income Podcast.
In the last year, Drew has exploded his portfolio and added 9 new rental properties. That's a lot of houses to buy while you're working full time. And Drew did it. I want to hear how he did it. He's also gotten his son interested in real estate and helped his son buy his first rental. I think it's awesome when kids get interested in real estate, and I want to hear exactly how that worked. We'll get into that in just a second, but first I want to welcome a brand new sponsor to the podcast. It's rentprep.com. And RentPrep is bringing us a brand new feature called the Landlord Pop Quiz, and here is today's question. Can you charge a tenant for a pet deposit for their emotional support animal? Think about that for a second. You can charge a pet deposit if someone has a dog or a cat or some kind of animal, but can you charge a pet deposit for an emotional support animal? The answer is actually no, you can't. And I know this is really frustrating to a lot of landlords, but you're actually breaking the law if you charge a pet deposit on an ESA. And that's leaving a lot of landlords feeling that dubious tenants are out there abusing the system and getting these ESA letters from online doctors they've never met. It's becoming a really big problem. And that's why our friends at rentprep.com have consulted with a top landlord attorney and created an animal addendum that you can add to your lease to protect your rental property. You can get your free copy. Just go to rentprep.com/Dan. RentPrep is a tenant screening company that believes in connecting and educating landlords. And if you check out their website at rentprep.com/Dan, you can get that animal addendum, but there's also links to other services they provide, like their private Facebook group. They have thousands of landlords and property managers that are waiting to answer your questions. They also have a course on how to find the best renters. It's a really good course. It's totally free, goes through everything you need to know to find the best renters for your rental properties. You can also learn more about their company, which hand compiles background checks for your applicants. Just go to rentprep.com. That's RENTPREP.com/Dan. Of course, that's my name. And while you're there, grab a 20% off promo code that you can use for your next background check when you have your next vacancy. That's rentprep.com/Dan. All right, let's get back to the interview. So, Drew, tell me, did you really buy 9 properties in 1 year?
That's exactly right. So the first 7 or properties that I bought, I just did kind of slowly. And it wasn't really because I intended to. The first few, yes, I wanted to learn and I wanted to go slow. And truly, I was ignorant enough to the housing bubble that, you know, I didn't even pay attention to it. I bought a few through those times, and it kind of, by virtue of dollar cost averaging, I didn't really have any issue. Plus, I wasn't trying to sell them at that time. And I amassed a little bit of equity in them. And about a year ago, a previous contact through a realtor said, hey, are you still buying properties? And I said, yeah, you know, I haven't bought any lately, but sure, if you've got a deal. And it was a good deal. And I bought it. And I said to my wife, you know, I said, you know what, we probably ought to look at this again, because there's times where I think, you know what, I wouldn't mind getting out of medicine or being able to do a different version of that. And, you know, maybe real estate's a good vehicle to do that. No one's going to say, hey, Drew, you know what? Here's how you do this. Here's how you build from 7 houses to 400, unless I do it myself. And so I said, you know what? We need to quit looking at this as hobby investing, and let's make this a business investing. I don't want necessarily a second business, but I need to look at it that way, make it more efficient, and grow it exponentially. And you're exactly right. And over the last year, I bought 9 properties.
So how did you find that many deals? I mean, that seems like if I were to say, okay, I'm going to buy 9 properties this year, that to me just sounds like an incredible amount of work finding that many deals. What were you doing to find 9 deals?
Well, so, and most of those have been found in different ways. And my wife, even though she doesn't love the number side of this or even claim to understand any of that, she loves trying to find these deals. So she, you know, she'll search online. She'll bring me a list of, hey, I think these look like potential deals, and we'll kind of cull the list and then go on a weekend and go drive and take a look. So some of them were found that way. And usually what I would do is once we would find something we're interested in, I would actually just contact the realtor myself and say, hey, look, I'm an investor. I don't have a realtor. What I'd like to do is if you'll, you know, look at this property, you can be the sole realtor on the deal. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to buy it as an investor and I need to buy it at this price. And usually because they're getting all 6% of the commission, they're okay. Even though it's not a big commission, it's still more than they were going to get if they had to split it. So usually they're a little bit more apt to kind of work with me on that. And granted, they are truly having to work for the seller, but I found that they're a lot more willing to go to bat for me and try to help me to close a deal because they're not having to split that commission. So some of them were found that way. A couple of them we would drive around and we bought a few for sale by owners. And then the even better ones are the ones that I found from networking. And that was the other thing I did this year, Dan, is I also said, you know what? I need to tell more people I'm an investor. Mm-hmm. Nobody mm-hmm. knows that. People at work are like, what? I didn't know you bought houses. And so I started telling everyone. I started posting about it on Facebook. You know, before I thought, you know, I don't want to be that guy that's putting stuff on my Facebook right. account while I'm buying houses. But truly, by, you know, putting some stuff on there about that, people are like messaging me and saying, hey, actually, I got a message today from a Facebook friend that said, hey, I know someone that wants to sell their house. And most of the time, those deals don't work, but sometimes they do.
Right.
And a great story was that a nurse that I work with in the emergency department, by virtue of me saying these things, had said something about, hey, you have rentals. I've got a second house for my divorce and, you know, I'm thinking about selling it or maybe should I keep it as a rental? And we kind of talked about it and she decided to keep it as a rental. But 3 or 4 months later, she comes to me and says, you know what? I don't think I like this. Why don't you buy this house? I said, well, give me the address and tell me about it. And she gives me the address. It's, you know, an area that I hadn't bought before, but it's still a good area. And she said, I tell you what, if you'll just pay off my mortgage, because I'm kind of in a bind, I'm going to have to move in a few months. And I tell you what, if you'll pay off my mortgage, you can take this house. And the quick numbers on that, Dan, is I think she owed $38,000 on the mortgage. The house is valued retail anyway at about $65,000. I just rented the house out for $750 a month.
That's great.
And she had done a lot of improvements. There's really, I mean, she had done lots. All I had to do is I took up carpet in 2 bedrooms and put down some new flooring. But it was a great deal. And that was by virtue of me just telling people that's what I do.
Right.
Now, of course, I gave her a little bit of money above that. I'm not going to just, you know,
right. Yeah.
But it worked out really well. And I think those are the kind of deals whenever you're saying, I'm going to ramp this up, I'm going to buy lots of deals. You just have to go look. And it seems like the more that I concentrated on real estate, the more things that fell in my lap. I would tell my banker, hey, you know what? I'm done. I'm not buying any more houses right now. I'm going to take a pause. I'm going to get these rented out. And he started laughing. He goes, because every time you told me that, you'd come back to me 2 weeks later and go, hey, what do you think about this?
It's addictive. I mean, once you start buying houses, it's hard to stop. Like, it really is. It's
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, now tell me about your son. Now, he's, what, about 11 or 12?
He's 12.
And so you're trying to get him interested in real estate. I think this is really genius, the way you're trying to plant the seed in his head. So tell me what you did.
So we have 3 boys, 10, 12, and 15. And, you know, I grew up, I wasn't poor, I wasn't wealthy, but my parents didn't really invest or do anything. So I really got no kind of financial other than education from them, other than here's how you balance a checkbook. You don't want to go into debt. And, you know, it's kind of some basic things. So my wife and I have talked about, well, how can we educate our boys? And, you know, they've gone with us on all this real estate stuff and they've gone with us as we tour houses, but we've never really involved them. So about a year ago, we were on vacation and I'd made a deal with the boys and I said, you know what, if you guys will read a book of my choosing, a business book or what have you, I'll pay you, I think it was $50. You know, because they're reading anyway, but my 12-year-old is just a fervid reader. He loves it. And he said, you know what, Dad, I'll do that. I'll take that $50. Mm-hmm. And I said, read Rich Dad, Poor Dad for Teens. There's a teen version. And he read it. And I said, but to get the $50, you have to be able to have a good discussion and show me that you understand the concepts. And so, of course, I had to read the book. I'd read the other books, but I hadn't read the teen version. So I read it and you know what, in a week he's coming back to me and he's explaining to me about assets and what, you know, depreciating asset is and what good debt is and bad debt is. And I'm like, okay, this is good. And what we had done, Dan, is, you know, we had, from the time that they were born, we had set up a dividend reinvestment program or plan. And that's, for your listeners, if they don't know, it's basically there are certain stock companies you can invest through the company without using a broker. And you can set a $75 a month that comes out of your checking account, or $25 even. And it just goes to that. And every quarter when they do dividends, they just buy more stock. Mm-hmm. And so it's essentially, your dollar cost averaging the stock, and then you're also getting compounding interest. And so the boys had amassed some money, because we also took any Christmas money or gift money that they got, and we would put some of it in their stocks, and they would watch their stocks grow. And they said, oh, you know, I know I've got X amount of dollars. That's cool to look at. Can I use it? And we'd say, no, you got to wait till you're 18. Well, my 12-year-old that had been reading these books said, hey, Dad, I've got this money. I know I can't use it till I'm 18, but can I buy a house? And I said, you know what? Maybe you could. And same sort of thing. I said, here's the thing. I'm not going to buy the house for you. I'm not going to do the work for you. But if you want to use your money and you want to come along and learn how to do it, maybe we can make this happen. Mm-hmm. And so truly, he would get online. We'd look at houses. We'd make a list. And he loves to eat. And he's like, okay, Dad, let's go do a real estate lunch. So we'd load up, we'd go eat at his favorite restaurant, and we'd have a list of houses, and then we'd go drive for dollars and look, and he'd write down, and I'd make him call. He'd call the realtors and say, hi, I'm Cooper, and I'm wanting to buy a house. And, you know, some of them took him serious, some didn't. Mm-hmm. And we looked for several months. And long story short is we found a HUD property. We had called them and they said, you know, it's owner occupant status right now during the first 30 days. We had made a couple offers on some other houses. And, anyway, so this one came through and he had just gone to bed. The realtor calls me and says, hey, it goes to investor only status, tomorrow. Do you want to put that offer in? And so we put the offer in, we'd previously discussed, and we got the deal. But what I loved about it is that even before that, we were going through these houses, and whenever the realtors would show, they would start trying to talk to me, and I'd say, no, talk to Cooper. So Cooper was asking questions. He was talking about foundations, and he was, wow, you know, trying to estimate repairs. And he had learned some of that from watching, and of course, we're helping him. Mm-hmm. But truly, I wanted him to be involved, because if I did it for him, there's no learning there.
It's, right, right.
You know, now granted, he understands it on a 12-year-old level, and he's fairly advanced for a 12-year-old, but it's still a 12-year-old's knowledge, and he's enjoyed it. He's loved it. He's thought that this is great. He still wants to go and look for more properties. And you know, we talked to lawyers and we talked to the title company, and here's the thing for the naysayers is that, you know, truly we had to title it in our name, because they just said that there's so much red tape of trying to put a minor in an LLC, sure. You know, but they said essentially just title it back to him at 18. And you know, we used his money for the down payment because he had to calculate all that and understand that. We used his money for the minor repairs, and he has to continue to follow the house. Even though we did use the property manager, I have him go over it each month and say, here's your expenses, here's how much you cash flowed. And we're going to take that cash flow and kind of fund that dividend reinvestment plan again, so that you can do this again for another house.
That is really awesome. I mean, imagine if you had that when you were his age. I mean, where you could be today. I mean, that is just really awesome that you gave him that opportunity. That is awesome.
I started at 30. I mean, just imagine if you'd started at 12.
Right.
You know, even if he does nothing more with this, number one, he'll have an asset that he can either take the cash flow from during college and fund things, or if he needs to, you know, cash it out to pay for college, that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. But I think I would love to see that he would take it and kind of, you know, segue that into some investments on the side for whatever career he plans. And he kind of jokingly, you know, says, well, Dad, if I just become a big real estate investor, I don't even have to go to college. And I said, what? I tell you what, you know what? You possibly could.
All right.
Let's plan a backup plan, but let's use real estate and let's grow a side business.
Yeah. I mean, if he can pick up a property a year by the time he's 18, you know, he's going to have a nice little portfolio. I mean, that's really great.
Exactly. And the funny thing, Dan, is that my other boys, you know, the 10-year-old's interested, but he doesn't quite understand the numbers. So he's going to have to mature a bit more. My 15-year-old, super bright kid as well, but he's more social right now, kind of typical teenager. He'd rather go out and buy a new pair of shoes than try to figure out how to make the money. But hopefully he'll see how Cooper's doing and kind of turn his idea around and maybe get interested in it as well.
Has he had any tough times yet where, you know, maybe you had a tenant that wasn't paying or there was some big repair issues at the house? Has he seen the downside of owning rentals yet?
Well, a little bit. I think we closed on end of January of this year, so it's still fairly new. But, you know, we bought the house. He down payment. We even took him out of school to go to the closing, even though he couldn't sign, but he was there and kind of going through all the paperwork with the title company. But we kind of estimated, you know, 2,000-3,000 kind of cosmetic repairs. But as typical, and all your listeners understand from being investors, is that there's always those uncertain expenses. And even though the AC unit had turned on and checked out, it really didn't. Well, right there's another 3,000 out of your drip plan, Cooper. Sorry. So he had a kind of a bigger expense in the beginning, and so that was a little bit of a downer for him. But I said, you know what? That's what happens. You got to plan for it. You just got to expect those things to happen, and then it's not such a big deal. So.
And that book is Rich Dad for Kids, right? That's the initial book you gave him.
I believe it's Rich Dad for Teens. I believe is the title.
Well, if anyone wants to give that book to their teens and pay them $50 to read the book, I think that is a great idea. And I'll go ahead and put a link to that book. You can find it on the website, rentalincomepodcast.com/episode127. Well, Drew, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate you telling your story.
Absolutely, Dan. I appreciate you having me.